Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
Hi, Fred. This is Kevin Clark.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for joining us on the show. I want to take just a quick second to thank our listeners for joining us. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. We've got a special show today. It's a guest on the show, Kevin Clark. I just learned, just as we're chatting before we started, that he's also the vice chair for the SMRP National Conference coming up. And I believe, Kevin, it's October 22nd. To the 26th, I think, or it's like 4 or 5 days. It's a 4-day conference.
Well, it's 4 week. That's right.
Yeah, and it's in Orlando this year. So hopefully, there's no hurricanes heading that way. That'd be nice.
As far as I know, it's clear.
Yeah, as far as we can tell. I look forward to it. It's my first time there, and you mentioned I should be prepared to be impressed, and I. Do you mean like in a light show or something like that? Or what would I be impressed by? What are you referring to there?
Maybe I should qualify that statement. Not necessarily impressed in the way of like Disney fireworks, but impressed in the way that SMRP is so engaged in the global community when it comes to maintenance and reliability and just how active they are and how responsive the crowd is that you're going to see at the conference.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm already getting notices from a range of vendors that are displaying there, and I'm trying to make appointments, and it's going to be a very, very full week for me. And I'm presenting there. Are you presenting at all?
Oh, good.
Or are you doing other cool stuff in the
community? Yeah, they'll keep me busy. Plus, you know, Fluke will be there, but the conference itself will keep me very busy.
Okay, all right. Well, I hope to run into you there. And for our listeners, please look for both of us while you're there. There's the Fluke booth is going to be there, and it's in Orlando in October. It's going to be great weather. Keep our fingers crossed for that. And I'll be presenting, and I'm drawing a complete blank. I didn't do my homework as to what day I'm presenting, but I'll be there, and it should be a lot of fun. But I wanted to talk to you, Kevin, because I know that you and Fluke are you're very active in the maintenance and reliability world, but more importantly is that you've got this cool set of devices that you're bringing to the market that are caught my eye. Let me put it that way. Is there one in particular was this a vibration sensor, but it's not built into new capital equipment. Modern equipment today oftentimes has a lot of cool stuff and sensors built right into it. But this is going back to an old motor or old system or a gearbox, and you could attach your device to it, and it sends off the data and to be collected and analyzed and so on. So, you know, what's that all about? I mean, do we need,
I'll go ahead and fill you in. It's what it is. It's 3561 vibration sensor, and it also has temperature as well. And so you can monitor both vibration and temperature through this sensor, and it's no bigger than a lipstick case. And so it can be mounted practically anywhere. It can be in a pretty harsh environment outside, inside. So it can be used in just about any situation. It connects from the sensor wirelessly up to a gateway, and that gateway is Bluetooth between the two. Mm-hmm. And then from the gateway, it's Wi-Fi, then on up to the rest of the network. And you can take, you know, up to 15 or 20 of those sensors, and they'll talk to a single gateway, and that gateway just plugs into an outlet.
Okay.
That's all it does. So it looks like the end of basically the receptor of an extension cord. That's all the bigger it is.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. One of the things, though, that I know how important vibration monitoring is, and I'm familiar with the handheld devices that you go up to the equipment, and usually you need somebody sure. that's skilled with using that equipment and as much to interpret what they're seeing. And there's plenty of courses available from a range of vendors about making vibration measurements and monitoring equipment. And then there's a whole nother field of people doing prognostic health management, where they're looking at patterns and increasing or changing vibration patterns to indicate different things and forecasting when the right time to do a repair or replacement is. So you're, what's the scope here? What are you guys trying to do? Is it fit into that whole sphere or just providing the data set or replace the sure. handhelds or?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is probably yes. So not necessarily replace the handhelds, but we are in that condition monitoring space. And our focus isn't necessarily to plant thousands and thousands and thousands of sensors all over the facility. Mm-hmm. Our focus is around the maintenance technician. And so making sure that maintenance technician has all the equipment they need to do their routes and has all the equipment readily accessible to them to accept data in from any of our devices. So that could be the 3561 sensor that's sitting out on a motor someplace on the plant floor. It could be the handheld vibration sensor that they have in their hand or the handheld thermography camera that they have in their hand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or it could also be one of our mounted thermal cameras. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so our whole focus is to build up what we kind of loosely call the digital tool belt, so that they have all the tools they need available to them, but also a way to look at that data. And that's Fluke Connect. And that's the system that collects all this data from all the tools, whether it's a sensor out on the plant floor or a handheld tool. All that data goes back to Fluke Connect. They have it in one app on their phone or on a tablet, and they can get to all that data from anywhere, mm-hmm. as long as they have a Wi-Fi connection.
And when you mention anywhere, I'm thinking of the nearby coffee shop, you know, and
right.
sitting by waiting for something to break or change. The handful of plants I've been in is they have terabytes of data already. You know, so many pieces of equipment are monitoring uptime and different error codes and faults that are being generated out. And they had just piles and piles of data. Mm-hmm. And didn't really know what in the world they're doing with it. And the maintenance techs, I know what you're talking about is trying to get the appropriate data, but it mm-hmm. takes some skill to know what you're looking at and understand what this means. You know, rise in temperature might be just the sun came out or it's a problem, for example.
Right.
So is there help there? Is there stuff to help
with it? Yeah. And actually it's a great point because an awful lot of the data that's been collected for decades is sitting idle someplace, often some historian somewhere mm-hmm. that lots of companies just have not gotten to. They got all this valuable data built up in history over the years, and that data is just sitting there waiting for somebody to do something with it. And so we kind of look at it a couple of ways. What we're creating, we consider to be condition data. And what's been hiding behind the scenes, or let's say used in a way that doesn't really give you an indication of what the asset's health is, we call that process data.
Right.
So we have process data, we have condition data, and what we try to do with the tools that we have available under our XLX platform is that we try to bring that process data and that condition data together. And that's what that technician is looking at is both of them, you know, what is an analysis of what the condition of that asset really is. And so without condition data, without some level of process data, it doesn't quite get you the whole story.
Right. Well, vice versa too. If I just know.
And vice versa. Yeah. Absolutely.
What's frustrating to me is like I go into a plant and they might have 100 motors of a particular class out there. And it says, well, mm-hmm. when were they installed? Oh, I don't know. How many hours a day do they run? Well, that one runs a lot. And that one's back up. It hardly ever runs. And it's kind of anecdotal to a large degree. You dig into it, there's data available. You know that you can find it. It's usually collected for another purpose, not for maintenance. Where this one seems to be aimed straight at, I'm going to collect this and present it straight to the maintenance folks.
Yeah, we build tools, Fred, that are helping the technician know when things are approaching. So know when a technician hits an e-stop on that asset. I'm sorry, when an operator hits the e-stop on that asset, the technician needs to know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years, and this is a very frustrating for early in my career, that by the time you get to the machine, the operator is possibly already hit the e-stop 5-10 times
right.
before the technician gets there.
Right.
And so some of the systems that we're putting together, like our Connect 2 technology, allows that e-stop signal to be sent directly to the technician, so they know the first time that an e-stop was hit on the machine. And so instead of getting over there after the failure has been there and gone for quite some time, and now we're working on different symptoms on the machine, the technician can arrive at the machine when the machine is failing or has failed at that moment.
Okay. Now, I mean, that makes sense. It also, you know, you got to be responsive enough and have enough staffing and be close enough. And in some facilities, that's possible. In others, not so much.
Right. But
the other part of this is that it sounds like you're not instrumenting everything and it's not really in the intent. Would it be, I know that this particular motor is an older one or we're concerned about it, so let's monitor it mm-hmm. for vibration, or maybe a rotation. Through
yep.
the period of a month, you could check a lot of equipment and collect data on it. What would be if you had 15 or 20 of these in the plant, these little vibration temperature sensors, I can imagine about a dozen different, I wish I had one for home.
I tell you what, I'll bring you one to SMRP.
Okay,
I'll
cool. Yeah. No, I put it on my refrigerator and washing machine, see what I get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the best way to look at it, and any reliability engineer that gets into the statistical side of the business knows mm-hmm. that the sampling of data is really, really important. We don't always need a constant signal,
right?
And so we're also designing to that as well. So instead of having to buy for 100 assets, we buy 100 or more sensors. We buy what we need. So if we need to take a sensor out there and set it on that asset for, let's say, 30 days just to get a nice sample set of the data and watch it and see where it's trending to, we can pick that sensor up and then move it to the other one. And then so that's a longer-term route for different sensors.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, companies can get to the point where they're just buying what they need rather than buying a whole set for hundreds of assets on the plant floor, which a lot of times return on investments just not there.
Right, right.
So the proper sampling across the assets and collecting that data. There are certain types of failures, certain types of assets that you want to make sure that you are monitoring constantly, because you can watch a failure approach and it happens instantaneously, and we want something that's going to catch that when it happens. There's others where they just slowly fail.
Right.
And
right.
So we can test those periodically to verify that it's still operating where it needs to be.
Well, I like the slower failure ones is then it gives me enough time to forecast and get the spares in place and take it offline when you don't take the plant down and things like that. That's where I see the real value is getting a heads up on when something's coming due to fail. Our equipment's getting so much better, though. The old mechanic approach of just listening to it or just leaning against it isn't working as well. So a bit better sensoring is the trick to it, I think.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we like to jokingly say in the business is that we run everything to fail, right? Run it to failure, right?
Right.
And then if you run it to failure, that is a legitimate RCM methodology for addressing failures. The problem is running it to fail and just letting it fail is not correct procedure unless you're prepared for that failure. In
That's
other
right.
words, You've got a procedure that says this is what it, we do when it fails. I have the parts in stock. I have everything available to me for when it does fail. And I knew it was going to fail. That's true run to failure methodology. And an awful lot of organizations claim run to fail. But if you're not prepared for it, it's not really run to fail. You're still in that chaotic reactive mode.
That's right. If the management team standing over the technician's shoulder and saying, how come this isn't fixed yet? What's going on? You're not really doing the run to fail strategy. You're not prepared for it. I agree. Totally. Yep. It's also, I find it, even if you do it well, it's expensive. Depending on your process, if you've got built-in redundancy and you have plenty of capacity, which so few people have, it's really expensive to run to fail. And then, I'd love to get your labor back up and running, but we don't have the part. It's going to take a week. And you're then it's a mess. And I keep coming back to this lots of data, though. It from what you described, though, Kevin, is it really shortcuts that. It gives you what you need today. Does it have smarts in the software? You mentioned that it detects or signals when there's a imminent failure. Is that based on like a change of pattern or some other algorithms?
Yeah, so today we have technology built into the app itself that we can set it any way we want. We can tell it what our parameters are. We can let it learn it. But what we've got coming is the capability to really detect that the patterns that are coming out, getting more and more towards machine learning and artificial intelligence. But you know, the thing that that sometimes is hard to see is how common our equipment is.
Right.
We've got motors, then we have hundreds sometimes of the same motor in a facility, but we don't measure them as if they're equivalent, right? Mm-hmm. One fails, we go replace it and that, but we don't compare it to the one, you know, 30 feet down the line from it that just failed as well. We just go replace it and make sure it's up and running again. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't do that comparison. We don't see how they're performing across the facility. And what we're learning about, let's say, motors and pumps and compressors and things like that, that every single facility has,
right,
is that there is a common thread among them. And so what we expect out of a motor is very common throughout motors across all facilities. And how we monitor them is very common. And so we're really starting to see those trends. The more data that we collect and the more that it just fills up the database and fills up the database, you can just see that motors behave very similar no matter where they are, harsh environments, non-harsh environments. Mm-hmm. You can just see that there is a trend in motors and how they behave versus compressors versus other things.
Well, can you separate out the bearings from the motor itself?
Yeah, you can, and it really does. It matters how you're monitoring this, right? And that's why it was so important when we first built the vibration sensor that it was putting enough hertz out that you could actually do something with that vibration signal.
Okay.
And so, you know, temperature is really important when it comes to a motor, and vibration is really important when it comes to a motor, and other things like, you know, current and voltage and that also play a part. Mm-hmm, and you can really understand the health of a motor by knowing those few things.
That's true. You don't have to wait for smoke to come billowing out of it. That's a little late in most cases.
No, you can start predicting smoke. That's right.
There you go. Yeah. And then it just pays off in that you don't have to carry a ton of spares or extra capacity. And you can say, all right, next week we got to replace this when the line is in a changeover and we're in and out and we're done and it doesn't impact the schedule. We're off and running. I think that's where the payoff is. And then the pattern across your motors is, it just gives you that confidence that the signal that you're seeing is the same one that just about failed here, or we have to prove it to ourselves, or we run it to failure and see what the signal pattern goes all the way through. But once that gets established, whether with your data with the work you're doing, Kevin, or the inside a plant, is it builds that confidence going, yep, we've got another 2 weeks for this motor and we got to deal with it and off and running. Now, I'm a statistician, and and a reliability engineer on top of that. And so it's those kinds of models that give us great precision to a large degree to say, hey, here's how many spares we need. Here's the timing of it. Here's the staffing we need. And, you know, next week it's nothing but motor repairs, but the 2 weeks after that, we've got a break. Let's go work on preventative stuff. But you need good models and patterns that you can rely on to make that happen. And that works great.
Yeah. And you know, and in the past we've really depended on calculations and that, but now with the data, it's creating the model. It's, mm-hmm. it's a visual model. Mm-hmm, you can mm-hmm. just see it. And so I can look at those hundreds of motors that are all exactly the same motor across the facility, and I can watch and determine which ones are beginning to fail or are showing behavior that I just saw of another one that just failed just like it.
Right.
But, you know, what makes us the best, Fred, is that, you know, we have the analysis in Fluke Connect, but we've now made it capable of connecting to CMMSs. And so we can take all that data right out of the cloud and drop it into the CMMSs so that they can utilize the condition monitoring tools inside of those CMMSs to create corrective work orders or generate PMs mm-hmm. or particular assets based on the asset's health.
Yeah, you know, that's where I start to get uneasy. Maybe it's just the clients I've worked with. It's the CMMSs have so much potential. And again, so much data in them already.
Yeah.
You know, yep. And I've almost always run into somebody in the line that goes, nah, I don't like doing key punch stuff, or I don't like maintaining that, or it's not useful for me, kinds of things. And it breaks down. It's, that's a whole different topic. Is getting the CMMSs to work.
It is. And you know, I've been dealing with CMMSs for 25 years.
Okay.
And so I know the space. I know it really well. As a matter of fact, I could probably say that's the biggest area that I came from was mm-hmm. CMMS space. And to your point, most CMMSs in general go flat unless they have real data coming into them.
That's right. What you're doing with these products though is it's not counting, because one I worked on was a bunch of escalators, a whole fleet of escalators, and we relied on the technicians to make a chain stretch measurement, a gap measurement, basically in the steps. And if that wasn't recorded regularly, we couldn't build the models. We couldn't follow the patterns. We just couldn't get it good information there. And so then it breaks down real quick. Then I can't bring through that promise of the modeling and the predictive elements of it, which was frustrating. We could do it on the systems I had access to and could measure every day, but not the whole fleet. So it broke down. I wish I had a nice little sensor to measure that.
Right, exactly. You know, we're all in the position right now where we're finally being given what we were wishing for 20 years ago. And now we're trying to figure out how we deal with it, right? Because now we got the really cool tools, and now, okay, so let's go take care of it. Let's get it out on the plant floor. Let's start collecting that data, and we're just floored in some cases by what we're learning,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it's just instantaneous data, instantaneous health, and sometimes it's not what we thought.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just a little bit of insight can go a long way. Yeah, and I'm sure that happens. I you probably have dozens of stories of where you just the surprise learning right off, and they go, "This is great. Give me 10 more of these." Kind of thing. So, I know that we're going to set up a page to get more information. One about you and your role and a little bit about your work with SMRP and the conference that I'm looking forward to the conference, by the way. And also the products and the range of products you guys are offering and the types of solution you have. Now, one last thought for you, Kevin, is I think we've both, and I wasn't doing it deliberately, but I was waiting for you to say that this is maintenance 4.0 or the internet, mm-hmm. Internet of Things kind of things. Are those in the realm you're doing, but that's not in your marketing strategy, or just is that just a buzzword coming and going? Right?
Yeah, you know, I hate to call it a buzzword because the IoT has really latched on, right? And and I do have to admit, the IoT is what's enabling an awful lot of us to really get technology rolling, steamrolling.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, you're the Bluetooth enabled out to, off the floor. I don't have to run cabling. I don't have to run all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I just drop it in place, record where it is, so I don't lose it, and I'm off and running.
Right, and never before have we had the attention of the executives for maintenance technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been just huge for so many organizations where they can go out and grab the IoT technology, and the executives are saying, yep, yeah, that's what we need to do. That's what's going to make us competitive in mm-hmm. the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it is getting more and more competitive every day. And it's just the, our economy just keeps cranking along. And I know there's a working shortage and not enough technicians out there, so we got to use them, get them effective now, all the time.
I will tell you the one term that we have latched on as far as Accelix is concerned is connected reliability.
Yeah.
Right. And so we've worked in as reliability engineers, as maintenance managers, as maintenance technicians. We've worked in an industry for so long where all of our systems are just isolated.
Yep.
My reliability system might be one place and my CMMS might be under a desk or out in the cloud someplace. Nothing is connected. So we feel strongly about connecting the reliability systems and putting them in places where they're accessible to the people that need them most.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to learning more about it and seeing some more about it. And I'll be visiting the Fluke booth at the CMRP or the SMRP conference. And we'll go from that. But if our listeners, if you're interested in some more of this, we have a site set up where you can learn more about these products and the offerings and this connected reliability concept at ascendoreliability.com/fluke. Or I'm sorry, ascendoreliability.com/go/fluke. And you can find a bunch of information there. But also, we're interested in your feedback. If you'd like to join the discussion, let us know your thoughts and comments or questions that you have, and we'll be sure to get back in touch with you. We really do like hearing from our listeners. You know, Kevin, a lot of times our the comments and the ideas for these shows come from our listeners. And so we're at something like 360 plus episodes now. And when we started it, it was how we only had 10 ideas to talk about, and we've never been short of ideas. And in large part, thanks to our audience to give us ideas and suggestions and comments. And so, Kevin, thanks so much for joining me. If any other last thoughts as we wrap up here or summarize?
Well, no, this is my favorite conversation, I have to admit.
But, talking about data. Good. You sound like a statistician.
That's right. Right. But I appreciate being on the podcast and look forward to next time.
All right. Great. Thanks, Kevin. Well, I hope to meet you in Orlando, and I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks so much.
Great. See you there.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.